The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
24 hours a day, 7 days a week. The news never stops. Life goes on around town and around the world. You need a talk show that keeps track of it. A program with bold opinions that's always open to your views. That is this show. Welcome to the Mark Davis Show on 660 AM, The Answer.
All right, everybody, come on. This is going to be an interesting hour. Attorney General Ken Paxton will join us 8:35. We'll talk about various things about the law in Texas and things going on in an AG's life. Busy time for attorneys general, the proper plural. A lot of folks doing interesting things in various states. We'll see what Ken's up to here, the Attorney General's office in Texas. And we'll talk about stuff going on in our state, around our country, in our town. Just much, much, much to do. Grab a line at any of those levels or more than one. 866-660-5759. I'm looking at calls on multiple topics that I love. So let's not keep those folks waiting for any more time than is necessary than to remind everybody that it's Friday.
Wow! I feel good. I feel good. Ow! I feel good.
I feel good.
I feel good.
You want me to say I feel good?
I feel good.
I feel good.
I would not.
These birthdays kind of get me going on a tangent. So as Belinda Carlisle turned 60, I kind of broke the seal. I went back to some early Go-Go's. From Beauty and the Beat. Little skid marks on my heart. Alrighty, alrighty. 866-660-5759. Burning topical rubber. Moving quickly into a lot of stuff on the phone. Let's just get going. Oh, okay. Amid a lot of stories, big, small, national, local, global. If there's one thing that's always true here on the show, I always look for accountability, thing, a view of mine that you want to challenge, some usage, some something. And here comes one of those moments. We're in Garland. Hey, Ron, welcome. How are you?
Hey, good morning, Mark. Just wondering if you still had a job or not.
Hang on a second, because you have reminded me of something that I did last hour. Let me check. Yeah, I think my security card still works in the hallway, but with great caution, I offer you the floor to remind everybody of what I just did.
Yeah, you made a cardinal talk show sin. You used the term cotton pick in mind, and I'm surprised you're still here.
I know. Okay, we're having a lot of fun here. You're totally right. And you know what? And my testament to this is it didn't occur to me for 1 second. And I know the only reason it did to you is because there was a big stink about it. Well, who even was it? Oh, that poor David Bossie. David Bossie was on Fox News and told they had one of the, I think, Ed Henry in the middle, David Bossie on one side, another guy on the left who happened to be African-American. And he referred to him as being, quote unquote, out of his cotton picking mind. And the black gentleman said, excuse me, I've had relatives who picked cotton, blah, blah, blah. And ultimately, David Bossie had to apologize for his horrible racist remark. It was nothing of the kind. Ron, thank you. It was nothing of the kind. Now, last hour, and I'm totally kidding, by the way, I may roll that usage out again at any given moment. It's not a huge thing in my lexicon. You know what we were talking about? We were talking about John Brennan and all these people former CIA directors, former directors of national intelligence. They've served Republicans. They've served Democrats, blah, 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 and have done so honorably. And in the case of Brennan, here was my quote or near quote. I said, I totally get that these folks have served honorably in the past, but something happened when Trump got elected. They lost their cotton picking minds. And then I got on with the rest of the show and the rest of my life. Yeah. Which, by the way, I offer as proof that that is a usage that has existed in millions of people for many, many years without a single intended reference to actual slaves picking cotton in Mississippi in 1853. Or pick your year, pick your state, pick your situation. That was so, so very, very dumb. And by the way, this hinders improvements in race relations. Every time somebody like it was David Bossie on Fox News used that little colloquialism, and it got ramped up like it was the first cousin to an N-bomb. Every time that happens, race relations get worse. People go, "You are kidding me! You are absolutely kidding me!" This is an issue today. This nearly costs a guy a gig. Really? And it did. It almost. But Bossy's back, isn't he? Sort of. Anyway, he should be. Nothing should have happened that day. Usage. Words. Words. It's funny. What's one of my main philosophies of life? Words mean things. You know what that means? Often when I invoke the words mean things, it means that somebody's engaged in a type of usage and they're not appreciating what something actually means. This is kind of the reverse of that. Somebody is seeking to make something mean something that it did not in fact mean. People are ramping up faux outrage. There's plenty to be upset about. There's plenty to be upset about in life. Don't make stuff up. Just don't make stuff up. We're in Fort Worth. Dave, Mark Davis, welcome. How are you?
Great. Thanks, Mark, for taking my call.
My pleasure.
Listen, I read the Admiral McRaven opinion piece, and
yes,
there were two things that really stuck out to me. I could bash a lot in it, but one is when he uses the term unparalleled integrity to defend John Brennan, a man who lied to the American people and the Senate over and over again. You know, that's something he would have washed a cadet out of Buds, a candidate out of Buds for when he was leading Buds in the Navy SEALs. The other thing is when he says that Brennan or that President Trump uses McCarthy era like tactics to defend a man who spied on the Senate Intelligence Committee actually using a McCarthy like tactic. He says it without a hint of irony.
Those 60 seconds that you just laid down are absolute gold. And God bless Admiral McRaven for his service to our country. And John Brennan has had many moments of great honor. But Trump drove Brennan crazy. And Admiral McRaven and these other 12 people, George Tenet, Leon Panetta, sadly, David Petraeus, they find themselves needing to protect the club, needing to circle the wagons of the intel establishment, more than recognizing that President Trump not only had every right to do what he did, but was on a sound and firm basis for doing so. Dave, awesome. Thank you very, very much. We are in Irving. Tim, Mark Davis, welcome. How are you?
Hey, Mark, I love your show.
Love you back.
Look, when you mention the club of the politicians and the establishment that hates it when somebody attacks them, that is exactly what it's like with the bishops in the Catholic Church.
Yeah.
I love the Catholic faith. Mm-hmm. I love it. I am in love with it. But, Mark, you are exactly right in your judgment in the last hour that in Church Perversion 1.0 back in the 1990s, they didn't deal with the real problem. And the real problem is the bishops, who there's many in the clergy and in the bishopric that are homosexuals. And this started in the mid-70s after the sexual revolution. It infected the church as well, and they brought them in purposely to get them in there. There is such a thing as okay, the lavender.
Back up a minute. Because is there some strain of homosexuality among priests? Did some guys go, oh, my God, I'm gay. I've been brought up Catholic. This is going to be a problem. I'm going to rot in hell. I'll become a priest. That'll fix me. And it didn't. Does that scenario exist? I'm sure that it probably does. But I'm intrigued by the usage there of the quote unquote, they brought them in there. Who brought whom?
Yeah, it would be. Yes. Some of what you mentioned would be true.
Right.
But you have homosexuals. They saw it as easy picking ground. All male situation.
The pronouns are troubling. Who did? Who saw what as this? Who are we talking about?
Well, if you study the history of it, you will see that it actually goes back to the beginning of the 20th century. And I don't want to go all the way back there, but there has been a pattern of homosexual bishops that mm-hmm. have gotten into the church. And they have promoted their own. They have looked for other homosexuals to promote, to get into positions of power. And we're seeing the fruit of it today, even still, with Washington, D.C. and Donald Wuerl. There's all kinds of things that you can say about him. But that's basically what has happened, Mark. And, Mark, I've had it from – this is very well documented. You can read a book by Randy Engel, she goes through all of this, but I've had personal priests tell me they estimate 40% homosexuality
I think that is stone cold insane. I caught a strain of this earlier on. I think some people are just so twisted off about homosexuality that they are making crap up. You for some reason want to believe that it is. Does this exist? I'm sure it does. Is there gayness among priests? Yes. Is there a protective racket if we find a gay priest or even gay bishop that will protect and even maybe guard those people against consequence? I absolutely believe that has happened. That's a long walk. I'll finish the paragraph in a second. That's a long walk from the notion that we got the gay bishops in here who are actively looking to let's go find and absolutely swell the ranks of gay bishops. I no sale, man, no sale.
Well, I tell you what, Mark, if you study it further, your mind, I think, would be changed. But
by study it by what? Reading a bunch of books by hopped-up people who are going to, you know,
not at all. Look, it makes sense. Look, if you even just go back and read.
All right, go ahead, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
If you even just go back and read the history of what happened in the 90s and how that came out. I was just revisiting the D Magazine article.
Rudy Cox, yes. You bet.
Mm-hmm. Yes, exactly. Look, it's laid out right there,
no,
Mark.
I'm well aware of all this. That's what I'm saying. But here's another thing.
A problem with is the percentage that I mentioned.
Well,
right?
Of course, I think it's insane. I think it's a common human nature thing.
I think it's insane.
Please do tell me where you got that from.
Okay. I got it from my form master, who has deceased, a wonderful man.
Right.
At Cistercian, where I went to school, and he told me, Tim, they estimate, and this is all.
Who is they? You got it from one guy who rolled out this figure.
It's not just one guy,
Mark. Maybe it's 12 guys, whatever. Go ahead, I'm sorry.
Yeah, but you know what? It's 12 credible guys, and it's really more like 1,200.
Well, are they really?
This is not, cool. Mark, this is not wild, crazy, in the woods.
It is an exaggeration based on passion. And I'm not.
No, it is not,
yes,
Mark.
It is. Yes,
it is.
It is
not.
I'm afraid.
Look, Mark, just take it from me. Look, I love you. You're a great guy.
I love you. And by the way, we don't particularly disagree. I think that because the notion.
It's the numbers that you disagree with.
Because I think people pulled it out of their butt in order to go, oh my God, we got gay priests. Half the priests are gay. Oh my God.
Bad imagery there, Mark, but I'm sorry, that is the nature of homosexuality. It wants to protect itself. It wants, Mark,
no,
you don't understand.
No,
Why don't you read the magazine article from 1998?
I'm totally familiar with
the Rudy Kos trial. It's laid out there.
I covered the Rudy Kos trial. I was here during the Rudy Kos trial, and I love you right back. And we have extremely similar concerns. The notion that the ranks of the priesthood are filled with perhaps a disproportionate amount of gay priests, and that upon the discovery of this, there's been a protection racket so that we don't find out that Father A or Father B or Monsignor C is actually gay, a protection racket that's led to, even in the case of misbehavior, even the case not just of homosexuality, but outright pedophilia, which is a different disorder, there's been a protection racket. I get it. And some people are so angry about this that they seek to paint the church as that 40% of it to as some kind of of gay mafia. And I just I think
Mark, can I give you a historical precedent?
Sure, go right ahead.
Okay, 10th century, Saint Damian had to clear out the church because it was a terrible problem back then.
Right.
I know you think now, Mark, you're a good guy. So, you have a good
So because of that thousand,
because of that
thousand-year-old example, that must mean the same thing is happening today.
Because of the ancientness of it, this is a perennial problem.
I know, but again, there are huge logical flaws in the certainty of what you seek to bring. What happened 1,000 years ago, so it must be the same thing today.
No, that's not the only evidence. I was talking about an article from 1998 that you covered
exactly.
All you have to do is look at it. Look at the seminary rectors who were involved in that. Mark, I know this is hard for you to understand.
No,
I'm a Catholic. I love the church.
You know what this reminds me of? And you're a great call. And it's funny because if somebody could somehow flash some number that indicates the number of gay priests and the degree to which this has happened, it might be more than I dare believe and less than you
it
think.
It will be.
And less,
and
less than you think. But the thing, the certainty here is killing you. The certainty destroys your credibility.
Look, don't get hung up on 40%.
You brought me 40%, dude. You brought me 40%. You should be hung up on the numbers you throw out in the points that you make. I'll tell you what it reminds me of. It reminds me of how many Muslims are here to kill us. Because I don't know what it is, 1 or 2%, which is a boatload of Muslims. It's a perfect analogy in the following way. When something is a bad enough problem, there's a desire to paint it as way worse than it is, so that people will be as panicked as we are.
Mark, let me just say this.
Sure, wrap it
I
up.
Was raised in Catholic schools. Uh-huh. My brother went to Jesuit.
Yes.
There was a priest that hit on his friend
that anecdotal story must mean it's 40%.
No, those anecdotal stories are all over the place, and then there's statistical criteria that come up. You can look at Richard Sipe, I believe is his name. Mm-hmm. He was the former priest, I believe he was a former Jesuit, who then was a psychologist that all the dioceses sent their troubled. They would go to him as an expert on this issue. Mm-hmm. It is his figure, and I don't doubt it.
Well, I know you don't, and I do, and there are a ton of people who will as well. It's because when people go about the socio-psychological exercise of figuring out how much a phenomenon exists, they'll use a lot of stuff. A wonderful call, I appreciate it. Here's the most important thing: is I am in no way downplaying the severity, the doubting the phenomenon that Tim describes. Not at all. And because there is a veil of secrecy over all kinds of dysfunction and misbehavior and et cetera, et cetera. And that was fun. I tell you what, let's do. Let's get down to the bottom of the hour and let's bring Attorney General Ken Paxton in. Speaking of which, do we need an investigation of stuff like this in Texas? I'll ask him. It's 8:25. Let us roll into news. It is 8:31, and we're going to have Attorney General Ken Paxton in, sitting down, talking about attorney general stuff, law stuff, Texas stuff. Get ready. I'm ready. It's 8:31. Gordon Griffin's in the newsroom. So it's a Friday, wrapping up the week, a lot going on. What's something we could throw in that could be of topical value as we work our way toward the weekend? How about a chat with Attorney General Ken Paxton, who is with us in studio? How great is this? How you doing, sir?
I'm doing really well.
Fantastic.
Thanks for having me
to
here.
Have you. What are your travels like? What do you spent the summer doing? My summer with the AG. What have you been doing?
A little vacation for the first time in a couple of years. That was kind of nice.
Where'd you go?
Working on my campaign.
Where'd you go?
We went to Martha's Vineyard.
Oh, good Lord. Now, here's the secret. In America, some of the most politically bizarre places, Martha's Vineyard, D.C., San Francisco are just the most beautiful, wonderful places to go.
Yeah, I was in San Francisco as well.
Which is always cool around this time of year because it's about 70 degrees there right now. So if you don't get any political conversation with anyone, it's possible to get in and out of there with great enjoyment. I've not done a whole lot of Cape Cod and Martha's Vineyard. It's
beautiful. Nice in the summer, especially if you have friends up there.
Yes, it is. Very cool. And then you come back and it's campaign time. What's up with that?
So we've got a few days, not many, 80-something days, I think 82 days till the end of the campaign. So we'll be busy traveling the state, talking about what we've done over the last almost 4 years.
And what's your – when people – if someone were to say, you know, what would have been the things that you've achieved that you're most particularly proud of?
It's been a very busy 4 years. We focused on, you know, fighting the federal government, 27 lawsuits in 27 months to stop them from stepping into our business. And we were very successful in doing that against the Obama administration. The opioid crisis we're focused on now, we have a huge focus on human trafficking. You know, we obviously shut down Backpage.com, which was the largest online purveyor of human trafficking in the world. So we focused on a lot of amazing things in the last 3.5 years.
What happened when we were going through the whole Backpage, and does Craigslist even do this anymore? I mean, how did we just suddenly open our eyes? Because haven't those ads containing certain code language where you know what's going on, haven't those been around for decades?
Yeah, I think that's true. I think we're just, you know, realizing what's going on. I wasn't in that world. I didn't realize it until I was in the Senate. And when we moved over to the AG's office, I'd always promised myself if I had the opportunity to do something about human trafficking, I would. And so we started a unit about a year into my administration to see what we could do. And we hired 3 prosecutors, 5 investigators, and we've had some amazing prosecutions. We're also trying to educate people. We have a video online that is very good. That's about an hour long that tells people what the warning signs are. So we've done, you know, I think a lot of amazing work. I want to stop human trafficking in Texas. We're the second worst state in the country. Houston's the worst city in America. And so we have a lot of work to do, letting people know about this and how to stop it.
So when you say warning signs, is it that in the midst of our normal day, we might see some woman somewhere with some guy in a convenience store or something, and they might say, "It's my daughter, that's my niece, or that's my son," and there are things we should look for that indicate that might not be true.
Absolutely. Our video, our hour-long video that's online, talks about and gives examples, has people in the video who recognized and then reported what was going on. So they saved, you know, hundreds if not thousands of lives.
And we'd rather, like almost anything else, terrorism, whatever, we'd rather have people, if you're wondering, go ahead and ask, see something, say something, right? We'd rather have people say something and have it not be the case than stay quiet and miss an opportunity to
exactly.
Help
our efforts have been largely, I mean, not only prosecution, but educational, because I think we can stop this if people are aware ahead of time. We'd much rather prevent it, right? We don't want these kids harmed. And so if we can prevent it, which is our first goal, by educating people, hopefully thousands of people, we can stop it. And that's what I want to do. I want to stop human trafficking in Texas.
I want to do some prison reform. I want to do some policing stuff. When we knew you were coming, with the kind of week I've had in this industry, it is up in Pennsylvania where your counterpart in the AG's office has apparently spent the better part of 2 years examining horrific things involving the Catholic Church and the occasional wayward priest. Every state has this to some degree. Are you getting emails that go, "We need to take a look at this here"?
So we don't do criminal prosecutions in my office other than what we're referred. So we have so far never been referred a case related to the Catholic Church, as far as I know. So I know it's an issue that has occurred across the nation. I believe that, you know, Fort Worth and Dallas have really, you know, focused on trying to prevent it, and I applaud their efforts for doing that.
What would – so it's kind of – describe take us through the sort of diagram, the sentence. What does it take for something to be referred to you?
So typically in Texas, you know, I kind of wish this was different, but original jurisdiction is with local county district attorneys. And so if a crime is committed, they have to be the ones that either do it or refer it. We can't, if they don't do it and we see a crime, there's nothing, we have no ability.
Interesting.
I think the law should be changed.
Are there, so in most states or in some other states, the attorney general's office, the AG can wake up one morning and say, you know, there's something that weighs heavily on my mind or something I'm seeing, something people are talking about. We're going to launch an investigation.
Exactly. And so if there's a DA who doesn't want to prosecute a certain crime, or they're, you know, just not interested or political reasons.
You can do it anyway.
Then the AG in other states has the ability to go do that.
Is that a legislative thing?
That's a legislative thing. Yeah, that's something that the legislature could change.
Note for next year. Why is that? And if somebody were arguing, no, that would be a bad thing, what would they say?
Well, the DAs have been very powerful. They like that original jurisdiction, and they have not wanted to share it. So if the legislature goes in and tries to change that, which they have.
DAs will go,
they come down and lobby.
That's no skin off their nose. There's no district attorney says, we're not going to let you. It doesn't cramp their style at all for an attorney general's office. Say, listen, we're going to pull the boat in the same direction. Help by finding various.
It's immense power, right? Because if you're the only one that can prosecute, or if you have a DA themselves that has done something wrong in the state, there's no one that can really prosecute a DA.
Oh my gosh. Well, glad I asked. All right, let's go to prison reform. First of all, what does that even mean? What kind of reforms do we need? And what did you and President Trump partnered up on something prison reform wise? What was that?
Yeah, that was last week in Bedminster. Texas has been a leader on prison reform. Mm-hmm. Started, back in the mid 2000s. When I was in the legislature, we passed in 2007. We were faced with this crisis. We needed to build more prisons, which was going to cost about $2 billion, or we could go in a new direction, which was more about treatment, job training. We went the new direction. Since that time, I think we've closed down 8 prisons. Instead of spending $2 billion, we were spending about $241 million a year, and we've had a very successful implementation. So other states now. So we at the meeting with Trump, we had 5 governors. We had another AG from Florida. We had Secretary Perry. Secretary Perry was there, and Secretary Acosta from Labor. And they are following our model. They just passed legislation in the House, U.S. House, that followed exactly or very closely to what Texas had been successful doing. So states are now following our model.
Anytime you talk about various alternative consequences for committing crimes, I've always been kind of a big fan of prison. It's where we put our bad people and it keeps them from doing things. However, I've always been aware of the concept. There are some people in jail who might not need to be in jail. Who are those? What kind of offenses? And basically, who's the best candidate for some type of alternative consequence?
So nonviolent offenders. We haven't made crime lessen. We haven't lessened crime or penalties. We really have just focused on when they're there. How do we encourage them to be better citizens when they get out? And it's been very successful. Drug treatment, all kinds of different things have helped Texas not have to continue to build prisons. We went from, in like a 20-year period, we had an 800% increase in prisoners. From 1975 to like 1997 or close to 2000, we had an 800% increase. And so we went from, a small number of prisoners to a massive, from like 19,000 to 155,000 prisoners in a relatively short period of time. And we just couldn't sustain the cost of that. So we're trying to balance taxpayer costs, safety. Obviously, safety is a huge issue, but so is, taxpayer cost and doing what we can to help people get back on the right path.
What's the status right now of the death penalty in Texas? I used to say that you could tell that we were really using, you could watch the line move in Huntsville. That's how efficiently we were using it. I still remain a fan of the death penalty. It is just, it is proper, it is biblical. I don't ever want anyone not guilty to be executed. Death penalty is getting beaten up all over the country. And there have been, every once in a while, every few months, we'll see, we can find a guy on death row and he didn't do it. What's the health of the patient there in terms of the death penalty?
So in Texas, we still use it. We are probably more than any other state, and we continue. My office is involved in those, almost every month at least. Sometimes every other week we have an execution, and it's usually for very horrific crimes. So we've continued to use it for those horrific crimes. I don't see that necessarily changing anytime soon in Texas.
Now, obviously, if somebody is appealing something and those appeals go right down to the last minute, that tends to go to the courts. What do you folks deal with in the AG's office?
So we are monitoring all of that. So we do all the appeals. Mm-hmm. So every capital case that is successful, we're dealing with all the appeals. So we're literally on the line with the governor's office, with the prison, up until the second of execution, because we're going to be there if something needs to be called off. We have to step in and say, okay.
And that's how careful we want to be. I mean, we know we're taking somebody's life away here, and they very likely deserve it. We want to be as certain as possible they deserve it. But if there's even a gap, a window of doubt, then, that's what a society wants to do.
We put a lot of resources into making sure that, it's done the right way, and that if there is a successful appeal, that we stop it, immediately.
Where was it? Was it Nebraska that did an execution with fentanyl the other day?
I wasn't aware
of that. It's like, what? Are we...
Part of the problem we're having is manufacturers are being sued.
For manufacturing the drugs that are used in lethal injection.
Right, so then it's harder and harder to get drugs to inject.
There was, and was it Utah or something, where Gary Gilmore got the firing squad? They almost had to go back to that for a guy because the pipeline for lethal injection drugs had dried.
Yeah, and most of our now we're getting it mostly out of the country, but mm-hmm. they're even trying to figure out ways to go after those companies.
All right, speaking of drugs, back to the opioids for a second. We have an opioid crisis. We seem to have stumbled across this. It's probably been the case for a while. What does a state do? What's the effort like there? Because anytime I bring it up, it's like it's obviously there's a people issue. There's a doctor issue. There's a –
Yeah.
Do you think?
So we have a multi-state effort going on. Texas has actually launched our own lawsuit against a pharmacy company that we found out. We have – evidence they were lying to doctors, telling them that these drugs were not addictive. And so, I mean, that's obviously fraudulent behavior. And so we're going to pursue all of those cases where we find evidence that pharmacy companies have lied, or if we find that doctors have done inappropriate things. At this point, it's mostly focused on pharmaceutical companies that have misrepresented the truth.
Gotcha. Attorney General Ken Paxton here. We've gotten through a bunch of issues. I appreciate it. A few miles from here, in Balt Springs, we got a trial underway for an officer. Cases like this arise every once in a while. We're looking at body cam. It's a shooting. Is it justified? Is it warranted? Body cams are great because they tend not – they can't lie, I guess. But if in a situation, an issue with so much passion – We want to find and punish bad shootings, unwarranted shootings, but we also ask people to maybe withhold judgment until facts come in, and also to imagine after we kick back maybe with a cup of coffee in our hand and look at some body cam footage, while reading the paper or send the kids off to school, understand what things must be like to be in the moment with a life or death situation.
Right, yeah, there. And I think it's difficult for most people sitting back to realize how difficult those situations can be. That the adrenaline, that just the you're at risk potentially of getting hurt or killed. And so I think important not just to look at the body cam footage, but to get all of the facts before we obviously make a judge. People deserve that opportunity.
You've told us a bunch of things, and there's one thing that I just got to ask about. You're in Bedminster, New Jersey with the president,
yes.
Right? Bunch of people are there, a lot of attorneys general. And
actually only one. Five governors.
Pam Bondi was the only other attorney general?
There were five.
Five other governors.
Five governors and then two secretaries.
All Republican governors? Or
one Democrat from Louisiana.
Look, there you go. And Rick Perry. When's the last time you were in the same room with him?
It's been a little while, and I see him occasionally.
Is there any dealing with him now? The governor is such an outsized personality. We've all been hanging with him our entire lives. He had no use for Trump. He was a cancer on conservatism. Remember that?
Oh, yeah.
And the next thing I know, he's energy secretary. Well, it's the most awesome story ever.
Well, it's even better than that because you'll remember in the president, that was the department he
wanted. One of the three. There was the third one. Exactly.
Yeah,
one of the three you're going to get rid of. Commerce, education, and oops.
And now he ends up.
And
the
now
one
he's running.
The one that he was going to abolish.
It's the most awesome thing in the world. But I've talked to him maybe 2, 3, 4 times. He's just thriving. He had more in common with Trump than he ever knew. And
they have a great relationship. You could see it in the room. He sat very close to Trump in the little round table. And they have
so
a good
awesome.
Relationship. He loves his job.
Yeah.
He's doing a great job at it. And, I'm proud of him.
It's awesome. I'm guessing you're enjoying your gig, too, there.
I have one of the best jobs in America. We have, from the Texas AG spot, we have, tremendous resources to go fight for, for liberty, for the Constitution, for Texas. And if Texas were not in that fight, we would have lost a lot of battles.
Indeed so. Leading in a lot of ways. And leading from the AG's office, Attorney General Ken Paxton. Always great, man. Best to Angela. Always great
to
see you. What are the kids doing now? Those kids that are forever like 7 years old to me?
Two at A&M. My two youngest are at Texas A&M. Yep. And then I got a daughter in the military. She's doing combat search and rescue. She's in the Air Force.
Where is she right now?
She's in Las Vegas at Ellis Air Force Base.
Man,
And then I have a son. He's designing self-driving cars for a company called Cruise, which is a GM sub.
Is this the West Coast son?
Yes.
He was with EA Sports. He was in the gaming world for a little while.
Yeah, he switched over in January, and he's designing these self-driving cars. He's a software engineer for Cruise.
Okay. All right. Next time, we got to talk about the self-driving cars. I'm a dork for this stuff. I love it.
It's fascinating.
It is. can you or he, is it time for those things to be out on the streets of Arlington or wherever they're thinking? I mean, is it time for that now?
It's getting close. I mean, they figure if they can make them drive correctly in San Francisco, they can drive anywhere.
That's right. Good point. All right, but the family update and the AG's update. Ken Paxton, always a pleasure. Hey,
thank you.
It is 8:53. Mark Davis, 660 AM, The Answer. Here on the Mark Davis Show, a little Miles Davis. This always works, doesn't it? No relation, but little round midnight. Let's cruise into the 9 o'clock hour, shall we? Got a lot of topical things we have yet to cover. That was Attorney General Paxton. You just got in the car and missed Ken Paxton. We covered 15 things. It was great. Catch it on the podcast. Rhonda puts up the podcast within the hour after we are done. Go to 660amtheanswer.com. Click podcast. Boom, there I am, and other shows as well. Let's get into the 9 o'clock news. When we come out on the other side, I'll tell you where you need to be on the night of October 24th and various other things as we get into our weekend. 660 AM, The Answer. Grab a line.
Three-star General Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.